As the B20 wrapped up today, we're going to be reflecting on some of the important conversations and themes that were part of this year's discussion. We're also going to be seeing if we can get a sense of what potentially lies ahead of the G20 leaders meeting that will take place over this weekend. We're going to kick off our reflections with a conversation with the Vice President for Africa at the International Finance Corporation that is a part of the World Bank. Of course, I'm referring to Ethiopis Tafare. He joins me on the line now to get a sense of the conversations that were taking place over the last 2 days. Mr. Tafare, thank you so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on our show. Inclusive growth has been a theme in this year's G20, B20, and in the G20 presidency of South Africa over the course of the year. From an International Finance Corporation perspective and from a World Bank perspective, how do we define inclusive growth?
Well, we define inclusive growth as growth that actually takes into account the need for job creation, particularly if you look at the youth demographic, and I'm particularly focused on the youth demographic in Africa. As you know, about 70% of the population is under the age of 30, 50% under the age of 15. And it's a fantastic demographic dividend, but we need to take into account for it to truly be a dividend, we have to make sure we're creating jobs for all this youth. So we're laser focused on job creation under our mandate. And that is one of the principal ways in which we're defining inclusion.
Mr. Tafare, you mentioned that the part of inclusive growth and part of the development that needs to take place on the continent is centered around small and medium-sized enterprises. I know this because I attended your opening ceremony yesterday and I listened to the conversations that you had throughout the day. I want to get a sense of the role of smaller businesses on the African continent and, more importantly, how they form a catalyst towards overall growth and inclusive growth.
So you're absolutely right to point out that 80 to 90% of jobs in any economy are created by small and medium-sized enterprises. So supporting them is key to job creation. The challenge is that many of them struggle to get financing. So we're very much focused on making sure that we figure out ways to get these small and medium-sized enterprises financed. There's a vast shortage of financing for these entities, and we're working both with the SMEs themselves as well as with financial institutions and other providers of credit to make sure that these SMEs are getting the financing needed for job creation. Part of the effort is really about preparing them for financing. So many SMEs run themselves in ways that make it challenging for financial institutions and others to see them as creditworthy. So we're training them in the running of the businesses, but then we're also working with financial institutions to encourage them to lend to SMEs and providing them with guarantees against their lending to these SMEs as a way to be sure that SMEs, given their job creation role, are able to get financing to run their businesses.
Mr. Tafare, do you think a part of the responsibility lies within rethinking the financing models that exist out there? As a continent as young as Africa is and as historically underdeveloped relative to its other continental peers, one would argue then that the expertise and the standards upon which other international organizations measure financing should be adjusted to ensure that we create more inclusive financing structures.
What would agree with you 100%. What we have found is that financial institutions are not necessarily the best channel through which to get credit to SMEs, in large part because they are very much focused on credit assessments that are based on assets, and many of these SMEs don't have assets. So we're looking at working with other entities that take what I call a behavior-based approach to assessing creditworthiness, looking at these companies and how they actually behave, how they're viewed in their communities, and on that basis, extending credit. That means working with institutions that are not your traditional financial institutions, but it also means we're leaning into technology. We're finding that there are models, technological models, you can use and you can apply to better assess creditworthiness, moving away from the asset-based approach that financial institutions take. So we're doing both. We're working with traditional financial institutions because they do reach some SMEs, but we're working through other channels to get to those that are not historically benefiting from credit being extended by banks.
Mr. Tafaro, before I let you go, I want to get a sense of the role that an organization like the International Finance Corporation plays on the global stage. It cannot be overstated enough that organizations like the World Bank, like the IFC, form critical parts of development financing and facilitating relationships between countries that might lack financing and perhaps countries that might have a need to get involved more in the development of other countries. How do you see the IFC forming part of this beyond just the G20, beyond just these sorts of gatherings?
You've perfectly described the role that we play. We play a role both in terms of developing local private sectors. So we find companies and enterprises in local markets that serve a purpose, that solve a problem, and figure out how to finance them through either debt or through equity. But we also play a critical role in attracting investors on a cross-border basis who on their own might not be prepared to invest in another economy, but in partnership with us are prepared to do so because they know we have experience on the ground, because they know the countries in which they're investing are shareholders of ours. So we play a very important role of mobilizing capital and mobilizing investors on a cross-border basis so that, as you say, countries can benefit from what others elsewhere may be able to bring to the country in terms of private sector development.
Driving inclusive growth and using financial means as a catalyst towards achieving that is the goal of the International Finance Corporation and partly what we aim to achieve with events and summits like the G20. For now, we'll leave this conversation on that note. Thanks so much to the Vice President for Africa at the International Finance Corporation, Iftios Tafaro, for joining us to take a look at financing on the African continent.
SAFM Market Update with Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Investec provided the market with an update on their performance so far into the new financial year. They released their interim results for the first 6 months of the year, ended 30 September 2025, including a cash dividend declaration. And we're going to be taking a look at these in a bit more detail with the Group Financial Director at Investec, Nishlin Samuj. She joins me on the line now to see what we make of the numbers. Nishlin, lovely to have you on the show as always. Thanks so much for taking the time. A strong start to the year. I noted that the chief executive officer of the business highlighted that the macroeconomic environment continues to be quite interesting and quite challenging. Is that how the business has been faring throughout this year? Is it a continuation of the previous financial year?
Hi, Jimmy, and thanks for having us on the call. The macroeconomic environment obviously showing good signs of recovery, particularly in South Africa, having coming off the grey list and also getting an upgrade. Also the positioning in terms of inflation targeting, I think all bodes well for the future. But the reality is that there's still choppiness in the markets. Good news, bad news. In the UK, very much waiting for the next budget announcement and how that influences the market itself. All said and done, we're quite proud of the growth that we've achieved in this period, the clients that we've acquired and the penetration into the markets that we operate in, albeit that we are absorbing lower interest rates, which we're pretty fine to do because, as the rates come down, that should encourage activity levels as we move deeper into time.
Nishlin, you touched on the UK, and for those that don't know, Investec is a dual-listed business both in South Africa and on the London Stock Exchange. I want to get a sense of how you're faring in the various markets that you operate. You're a widespread financial institution, not just limited to banking services, and you operate on more than one continent. How are you finding your split between the different types of geographical areas that you're in and perhaps how each of these markets might be performing?
Yeah, at the end of the day, what Investec seeks to do is to be highly relevant to the markets that we choose to be in. We were very, very conscious about where we deployed capital. But at the end of the day, the international reach of the business really positioned us strongly. We have a presence in South Africa, which reaches in further into the Africa continent, across to Mauritius as well, with a banking operation there. We have a wealth offering and in Switzerland. We have project and infrastructure capability in the U.S., South Africa, and the U.K. And it's really connecting all of these ecosystems, including our operations in India, that makes a big difference. At the end of the day, being well represented internationally to our internationally active clients, particularly South African clients, is also highly relevant for us as a business. So the important thing for us is that, you know, if you look at it from a long-term perspective, we think we are in markets that can achieve and gives us the possibility to have great growth potential. The business in the UK has been there for over 30 years and is so well established in that market.
Nishlin, let's take a look at the rest of the performance from a business perspective. Some of the improvements from a credit loss perspective. Numbers coming through are very positive there. The credit loss ratio, well within the advisable range. Return on equity numbers, nothing to be concerned about here. Everything falling within the guided range that the business has given out in the past. Is this a sign that the business is comfortable in where we're standing at the moment, considering we're only halfway through the year based on these numbers? Are there areas of concern?
No, absolutely. You know, the business is in such a strong position, and that's why we spent some time today really talking about our future growth initiatives, particularly spreading into areas where we have been underrepresented. And with new technology and opportunities in front of us, I wouldn't say that there are any particular areas of concern. Obviously, you've got to be mindful of market dynamics in both the short and the medium and the long term. And from our perspective, we are deeply invested in all the markets we're operating in. Absolutely nothing to call out.
Nishlin, interim dividend, cash dividend from a business perspective. It's important to keep shareholders in mind in times like this when the business, as you said, is doing as strongly as it is, despite the economic challenges that might be out there in the market. Your thoughts around that and how that then filters into just being able to thank investors for their confidence?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, at the end of the day, we try to keep a healthy relationship between ensuring that we've got capital for growth, we've got capital to meet all of the both the medium and long-term ambitions. Within that context, we maintain very healthy capital ratios, we maintain very healthy liquidity positions in our balance sheet. And we're very active with our clients, with our loan books having grown, you know, compared to the market, I think relatively strong. At the end of the day, the return to shareholders is a distribution of 43% of our operating profit. And, you know, those with a 7.4% yield on the stock, considering buybacks, I think that is a strong return to shareholders.
Nishlin, before I let you go, I want to take a look at what lies ahead for the upcoming 6 months. As you mentioned, I mean, the business, healthy balance sheet, good capital allocation, the business very strong in terms of where you are positioned. Are you looking at opportunities? How are you seeing the market? Understanding that we've had probably one of the most volatile years I can think of in recent times. How are you reading 2026 and perhaps the rest of your financial year?
Yeah, so our financial year comes to an end in March 2026. We provided some guidance to that period saying that we think that return on equity should be at minimum in line with what we reported at this point in time. So there's absolutely no deterioration in returns itself. We also provided guidance that, you know, with the initiatives we have at play, we think we can achieve a 200 basis point uplift over the next little while, implementing those particular strategies. So the business is highly focused. We are close to our clients. Our clients remain active in areas that they operate in. There is elements of fortune because when there's uncertainty in the market, you know, at the end of the day, you remain defensive. And also, you know, as clients seek to be internationally active, we have the ability to follow them wherever they go. So at the end of the day, we think the business is strongly positioned.
A business strongly positioned to go into the second half of its financial year and optimistic about what lies ahead. We're going to leave the conversation on that note and wish you and the team all of the very best, Nishlin. We look forward to catching up at the end of the financial year. Nishlin Samuj, Group Financial Director rather at Investec, joining us to get a sense of their first 6 months and what lies ahead.
There are plenty of people who want to invest in the stock market but don't because they believe it's only for the rich. Well, now you can buy some of the best performing investments in the world even if all you have is 1 rand. That's right, 1 rand. I'm talking to Connie Bloom, CEO of a digital assets trading platform built on the blockchain, and the company's called Mesh Trade, to talk about what the future of investing looks like. And as we find out, it's definitely not just for the rich. Don't forget, join me, Kieran Ryan, weekly on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. Listen on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This feature is brought to you by the Standard Bank Group. The B20 gathering concluded today at the Sandton Convention Centre, and we have been reflecting on some of the discussions that have taken place there. We're going to be reflecting on some of the recommendations that have been put forward as well. I'm joined on the line by the Finance and Infrastructure Task Force Chair, who you may also know as the Group Chief Executive Officer at Standard Bank, Sim Shabalala, to take a look at this and see what we make of it. Malume, lovely as always to have you on the show. Thank you so much for taking the time. Let's start with your reflections over the last 2 days, and indeed over the year. It's been quite an eventful year, I can imagine, not just for you and the Standard Bank business, but indeed as part of the Finance and Infrastructure Task Force.
Hard work and interaction between, in our task force, 169 people, as well as the 8 co-chairs of the task force that were partnering me as we worked through the data and the policy recommendations, which are culminated in 3 broad suggestions, which I think we'll discuss a little bit later.
Mm. I want to get your thoughts around what this means, Malume Sim, for South Africa, for the world. We've come through quite an eventful year. It's been up and down with all of the conversations that have been happening, but I want to reflect specifically on the relationships and the relations between local businesses and international businesses now that we've concluded the G20 summit, or the B20 rather, leading up to the G20. From a business perspective, has this strengthened the relationships that South Africa and indeed the African continent have with the world?
Oh, absolutely, Jimmy. Close to half of the people that were present were from outside South Africa. So you had more than 2,000 business people converging on convention center, and close to half of them were international. These were people that were here to talk Turkey, to have deep conversations with their counterparts around opportunities, around driving policy and building bonds and building relationships. There were many breakfasts where people were having discussions. I attended a breakfast. In fact, I'm happy to tell you, by DP World, where there was a deep conversation around infrastructure, ports, the shipping industry, logistics, all things that are central to not only the South African economy, but the African economy. And so in a sentence, the convention center was something of a bazaar where South African corporates were selling their wares and having deep conversations with their global counterparts.
Malume Sim, let's get into some of those recommendations. You highlighted that from a task force perspective, there were 3 main ones that were put forward. I want to get your thoughts around why those specific recommendations, even before getting into what they are and their relevance in today's world.
So, Jimmy, you will recall that our task force is one of 8 task forces. So there's employment and education, there's energy mix and just transition, there's integrity and compliance, there's digital transformation, there's trade and investment, the sustainable food systems and agriculture, and there's industrial transformation and innovation. And the one you and I are talking about, mine, was finance and infrastructure. that's in the context of direction given by the Secretariat and the leadership of the B20 to say we're trying to achieve four big things as South Africa, as summarized in the communique that was handed over to the Americans this afternoon. And that would be trying to unlock inclusive growth. So everything we're trying to do is about unlocking inclusive growth. Secondly, it's about human beings, you know, investing in human capital. Thirdly, it's about driving industry reforms, you know, to build resiliency into the global and regional supply chains. And then lastly, to strengthen the role and involvement of women and SMEs in value chains. That resulted in our case in the three recommendations that I'm referring to. And they broadly the following. Firstly, build infrastructure, effectively, roads, ports, bridges, dams, and remove the barriers to that. One of the main ones being, of course, that most projects fail before they get to financial close for a variety of reasons, either because they're not properly prepared, there's not enough data, or there aren't decent regulations in place. So deal with that. Secondly, get out of the way, get rid of all the impediments that make it hard for investors to invest in projects, and put in place mechanisms that improve public, private, and philanthropic partnerships as they invest in these projects. And then thirdly, get rid of the impediments that block money moving from investors into projects, into the economy, and into SMEs. One example of that is put in place structures that allow SMEs to get paid quickly by invoice discounting, for example. And so those are the three big recommendations, and they will make a big difference in closing the gap, the infrastructure gap on the continent.
Well, Emerson, before I let you go, I want to get your thoughts on the African continent, particularly in the context of the developments that we've been seeing out of Washington and the United States. You touched on a handover. We know that that is part of the G20 journey. There has to be a presidential handover to the next presidency that will then take this forward into the new year. Let's look at continental positioning. What does Africa then look like in the global sphere now that we've successfully hosted this? And I imagine I don't see why we would not successfully host the G20 over the weekend. So we can assume relatively that this has been a successful tenure for us and for our presidency. How does that put us, or where does that put us rather, continentally speaking, in the global scheme of things?
Jimmy, this was as much an African B20 as it was a South African one. And by way of example, of my eight co-chairs, two were African. Samala Zabaru, the chief executive of the Africa Finance Corporation, and Strive Masiwa, the great entrepreneur from Zimbabwe and the United Kingdom. And all our recommendations are about unlocking that funding necessary for the infrastructure on the continent. We need that infrastructure to get people to have access to more electricity. There are 600 million people that don't have access to the grid. We want people to have access to roads, ports, bridges, so that we can mine our goods, beneficiate them, manufacture on the continent, and sell our goods to the rest of the world. And you therefore need these roads, bridges, and ports. What that means for Africa, simply, Jimmy, Africa is going to be the fastest growing region in the world after 2030. Our populations are getting more digitally connected, younger, healthier, greater disposable income. And at the same time, you've got this infrastructure build out. As a consequence, we will be the fastest growing continent in the world. And the world knows that. The world is very attracted to the opportunities on the continent. And it's therefore up to us as Africans to negotiate the best bargains for ourselves, which is what we've been doing through the B20.
The position of Africa and the voice of Africa have now become even more undeniable, and that is a message from the largest bank on the African continent, my assets in the form of the Standard Bank Group. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much, as always, to Malumesim Shabalala, Group Chief Executive Officer at the Standard Bank Group, also Chair of the Finance and Infrastructure Task Force within the G20, for joining us to reflect on some B20 outcomes, G20 outcomes, and where we go to from here. This feature was brought to you by the Standard Bank Group.
When you're growing your money, you need to make the right choices. That's why at Standard Bank Private, we offer the best of everything. Our offshore investments are award-winning. We'll give you the best Forex rates around. As SA's biggest home loan provider, we offer unmatched expertise. And you'll have access to the best financial planners and bankers. So why not visit standardbank.co.za to join Africa's best private bank today? Standard Bank is an authorized FSP and registered credit provider. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This interview is brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa. And we're wrapping up our B20 reflections with reflections from other participants within the B20 this year. This time we're taking a look at it from the perspective of another business in the form of the Standard South African Breweries. I'm joined on the line by the head of corporate affairs at South African Breweries, Barbara Kopilovici, to take a look at some highlights from the B20. Barbara, thank you so much for taking the time. Always lovely having you on our show. Your initial thoughts and reflections around just the success of the summit and the engagements over the last 2 days?
I think the first word that comes to me, and that has been actually said by most of the stakeholders I've engaged with, whether they are South African or a global stakeholder, has been excellence. And I think that's really what was one of our main objectives, you know, as partner of the B20, is to showcase South Africa and Africa as a place that brings excellence to the world and enables for excellence. And I think with that basis, you have strong foundation for real change. So very, very, very good summit, very good process, and I think we'll see some positive shifts, hopefully, in the coming months.
Barbara, let's take a look at some of the commitments that were made. I want to get a sense of, from a stakeholder perspective, from an engagement perspective, South African Breweries is probably one of the oldest businesses to exist in South Africa and in the South African economy, which allows you to be able to contribute immensely in terms of knowledge and expertise and experience to our international counterparts. How did that influence the conversations that were being had?
So I think, first of all, the main commitment, well, the main way that SAB has enabled for the process was by capacitating the secretariat of B20, so lending actual skills, actual resources to ensure that the best people enable for the process to run. So I think that's the first contribution, is the actual capabilities that was given by South African Breweries to the B20 secretariat. Then there were contributions within the task force from knowledge on how do you look at enabling digitization more effectively, which is one of the big gaps in Africa realizing its full potential, or how do you need to enable for more movement of goods to also enable the potential of the continent. So those are just some nuggets, but we've been both part of the actual process and part of the conversation and input into the papers that were then published.
Barbara, what does this mean for the commitments that go forward? What does this mean for the relationships and moving the message beyond just having it as a gathering?
That's extremely important, because we don't want it to be a talk show. There was too much brains put together to really get something meaningful on the table. And I think it's all about remembering that this is not the only platform. This is not the only process. There are really, really strong global and local platforms to further advance that and potentially translate it into favorable regulatory environment where required. But again, it is not just unilateral asks from, the government. It's really about also business committing collectively to drive certain agenda. So it's all about, putting things into action, whether it's making meaningful public-private partnership, to support SMEs gaining, bigger visibility and access to finance solutions, or, the inclusion of women in the agenda. That's things that we need to translate into action through the initiatives that have been identified.
Barbara, can we get some highlights for you or at least from your perspective, whether they're personal highlights, whether they're professional highlights, around the particular event that was held over the last 2 days, and just what it means for you being part of the SAB family?
It's really, I think, the power of when you bring people together and focus on one thing at a time to solve. I think we've got all the solutions to realize our ambition of inclusive growth and shared prosperity. It's just about, the power of bringing people together and the power of both, of also the diversity of voices, be it from different industries, be it from different countries. It's an incredible wealth of knowledge. And with that, I think there's nothing we can't do. And I really have a lot of faith that you will see action, and hopefully our next conversation will be about the wonderful results that have come from that exercise in 2025. And hopefully we are making history this year, and I believe so.
Barbara, this year at the B20, or throughout the year for the B20, you were the B20 Secretariat. Now, that is a title that many people might not understand, and might not understand the importance of that within the conversations that have been happening. But it is something that also allows you to be able to get a broader picture around the themes that were in focus, and whether or not we achieved the objectives that we set out when we started this presidency and this journey. Do you believe that we've done that?
We have definitely done it. I have also, I can't, when you can't be the cook and also test your own cooking. So I've had to ask also the guests that tested the cooking, and the feedback is pretty positive, Jimmy, that we have achieved. So achievements would have been, in terms of the delivery of those recommendation papers, that would be really representing the business community globally in terms of what needs to be done to have a more, inclusive growth, as I mentioned, right? And so we were able to deliver those papers. That means the business community globally agreed on what needs to be done, which is no small feat, because it's a lot of different stakeholders that decided on one thing, and then we had a massive buy-in also from our G20 stakeholders that actually took over some of our recommendation paper within their leader declarations. And as the G20 unfolds, you will somehow pick up some of the inclusion or contribution that were made for this process that translated into value add for the broader process.
South Africa will be remembered for being able to bring together global leaders and global countries in a common effort to deal with financial inclusivity and inclusive growth on the African continent. We'll leave the conversation on that note. Thank you so much to the Corporate Affairs Director at SAB, Barbara Kopolovici, for joining us to reflect on the B20 Summit and perhaps where we take the insights to next.
This interview was brought to you by SAB, 130 years of being committed to South Africa.
Commitment is not just brewing beer, it's brewing hope. It's brewing dreams.
It's brewing a legacy. For over a century, believing in something bigger. Commitment is brewing a promise to step up when the nation calls. To brew moments that matter, that bring us together. For you, for the next generation. For 130 years and forever, SAB, forever committed to a future with more cheers.
South Africa, be sharp, not for persons under the age of 18.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
SME of the Week is powered by Capitec Business Banking. Start out or scale up with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply.
It's SME of the Week time. We get to spotlight small businesses doing exceptionally well for themselves and hopefully showcase these businesses to you, our SAFM community. This week's small business is a business I'm proud to say I discovered accidentally a couple of weeks ago, and I'm so glad I discovered them. The business is called The Unorthodox Chef, and we're joined on the line by the company's founder and CEO, Phil Koza, to take a look at his business and get a sense of what it's about. Phil, lovely to catch up again. Thanks so much for taking the time. Lovely to have you on the show. Tell us about The Unorthodox Chef. What is it and how did the business come about?
Okay, good afternoon to your listeners and thank you for having me. And The Unorthodox Chef is a business that was born out of the necessity and the need to actually preserve our culture, our heritage. And on our taglines, we are called Authentically African because we take pride in the foods that we ate in the yesteryear. And moving into Joburg or the cities per se, we want to be able to reminisce and just enjoy the foods that our grandmothers used to cook, the foods that our mothers used to cook. And we don't want to end up just missing what the food is. And the name, The Unorthodox Chef, is a name that was coined by one of my mentors back in the day because I was a very inquisitive chef in my early years where I liked to just experiment with different foods, different varieties. And the name was born to be The Unorthodox Chef. And when I decided to start the business, there was no other name suitable than The Unorthodox Chef to actually resonate with what it is that we wanted to do, because nobody, not many people, had actually ventured into freeze packing these traditional meals that we do. And it was taking the great leap of faith, because with your Eurocentric dishes, they can freeze practically anything. And because now we live fast-paced lives in the cities and everything, and we still get to miss our traditional foods. It takes a lot of time. You don't want your house smelling like mohodu because now you're cooking this dish for 6 hours. So we then want to be the bridge. We then want to be the solution to everyone that craves and misses their grandmother's cooking. We are then there to say, grab one of our dishes, one of the variants that we have on offer, and within 6 minutes, you have a meal on your plate.
Now, Phil, we'll get to the range in a second because I want to put some time into that. But my understanding from the conversations you and I have had, and perhaps you can just clarify that as well, is you're a professional chef and you have tailor-made these specific recipes that form part of your range.
Yeah, so I come from a background where I've spent over 2.5 decades in the kitchen, having quit law school as well. And I've worked for your two major hotel chains in the country, which is your Legacy Hotels, where I spent more than 15 years as a junior sous, executive sous, and head chef at Maritane and your Centurion Lake Hotels. And it comes from that. It stems from that where one then decides to be a brand and one decides to actually make a business out of a career. And it's very possible to do that, where if you try and hone in all the skills that you've acquired in the past 2.5 decades to then start a business, it's way easier to do that than not paying your school fees in the industry and then just wanting to jump into starting a business.
Phil, tell me about the unique approach you took to building the types of products you build. I mean, you went specifically for microwavable products that are able to be frozen as well, and the packaging allows for people to get a sense of what the recipe contains. Why would you go with those elements when putting together this product?
Okay, so we're looking at the health and safety aspect of this food fast. So there's a lot of certification that one has to go through. There's a lot of training that one has to go through. And it's in the processes when curating these dishes, because we can bring down a temperature within 60 minutes from your 95 degrees to minus 18 degrees. And this is one of the processes that plays a key role in the preservation of the nutrients, preservation of the consistency, and just making sure that there is no any microorganisms or bacteria that actually grows in this foodstuff. So it's in the curation of the recipes as well, because you'll need to find a balance. You'll need to find the right ingredients, you know, in using all the fresh ingredients to make sure that you get the right product, the right consistency, and we don't lose our substance in terms of having the right dish at any given time. So if you were to buy a dish at a Sasol garage in Musina, it would taste the same with a Sasol garage that's in KZN or the Western Cape.
Phil, let's look at that range, because unlike myself, many people might not have had the privilege of trying out what it is that you've got. And I see that the range, as you said, from an authentically African perspective, is quite broad. So I'm seeing everything from hard body chicken here to dumplings to mild goat curry. Take us through your inspiration behind the range and why you went with such a broadly authentic range.
Okay, so we live in a society that is quite broad. And if you look at the range that we have on offer, we are not just limiting all the dishes to our country, which is South Africa. South Africa has everybody from every corner of Africa, and we wanted to be inclusive to that as well. So you find we have common dishes that you find in the southern tip of Africa that are also found in your northern tip of Africa. So we then decided to find a balance. We then decided to incorporate all these different dishes. So it took a great deal of time and experimentation as well in curating these dishes, where I've had to travel to all 9 provinces in the country, speaking with the old grannies in those provinces, going out with ingredients, and then just asking the grannies as a professional chef to say, Magogo, please just show me how to make your typical beef stew using very limited ingredients, but the traditional way. And the common thing that we found is all the grannies, all the aunties that we had the privilege to actually meet and talk to, they were using the boiling method.
So Phil, how do people get hold of the product? How do people get, if they want to try the product, if they want to order some of the product, where do people get access to the Unorthodox Chef? Are you in any retail outlets? Give us all of that information.
Okay, we are in retail. We're trading with your Pick and Pays. We're trading with Jackson's. And we are on your online stores, which is your Zulzi and Yathir. And we are also looking to getting into your forecourts. And we are happy to say we've signed with your Sasol garages. So you'll be able to find all our foodstuffs in Sasol garages. And recently, we've also signed up with a couple of the engine garages as well. So we just want this food to be available to anyone and everywhere in the country.
And we wish you the best of luck in that endeavor, Phil. Lovely to have you on the show. All the best to you and your team as you grow your business. We look forward to seeing the business do exceptionally well. That was Phil Khoza, the founder of The Unorthodox Chef. Check them out the next time you are looking to get something authentically African. Inspired by the SME of the week? Start your own business or scale up and save up to 50% on fees with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP, FSP number 46669. Terms and conditions apply.
That's the sound of your business growing. Whether you're starting out or scaling up, turn your passion into profit with Capitec Business Banking. Save up to 50% on fees. Get fast credit approvals, personalized support, and Forex for your business. Open your business banking account on our app. Bank on better with Capitec, the business bank for everyone. Capitec is an authorized FSP. 46669. T's and C's apply.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
That's the show for today, folks. It is coming up to 7 o'clock. The SAFM news team standing by to give you the latest round of evening news. They'll be followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team, which means from my side for this week, good night.